Days today. July 18th meeting of the Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility Open Space Advisory Committee open. And may we please proceed with the call to order and roll call.
Supervisor Halbert excused. Councilmember Wong?
Here.
Councilmember Niver?
Here.
And Member First?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Let me just add that I will be filling in for Supervisor Halbert today since he is absent. That is filling in as chair of the committee. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for my last meeting on May 16, 2025. Is there any discussion?
Comment? There's a typo.
Okay. At
the top of page 3, I think it is, where it says Goodman Ranch. It should be Coleman Ranch, spelled as down below on that page.
Okay, so at the top of page 3.
Page 3, yes.
Okay, we have that. Have that noted for the record?
Okay.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, that's the roll call for the minutes, or? Do we need a motion to approve the minutes?
Approve the minutes as it has a revised.
Okay, we have a motion. Second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Minutes are adopted. Item number 3 on the agenda, public comment. Any member of the public may address the committee on a matter not on the regular agenda. No discussion or action may be taken on these items. And no yellow cards for item number 3, public comment. Are there any on the online? You raise your hands. Anyone else in the room? Okay. Seeing none, close public comment and proceed to item number 4. Item number 4 is an informational item entitled Webinar for Ranchers that was held yesterday, July 17, 2025. And we had speaker on this. Are you speaking?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi.
You can introduce yourself and proceed.
Ian Howe. Chief Operating Officer with the Alameda County Resource Conservation District to give you an update on this item. So with this committee's funding to the Alameda County Resource Conservation District, we concluded our series of workshops for the ranching community on conservation easements. It started with 2 in-person workshops, one in March, one in April. As I said, culminated in yesterday's webinar, where we have 17 participants. So across the 3 workshops, we had 17 attendees at the first workshop, 18 at the second, 17 at the webinar, for a total of 52 attendees. I'll give you a rundown of the yesterday's program. We opened the program Robin Hansen of the California Rangeland Trust, who have been instrumental in coordinating all these events. And then Clayton Copeman, a local rancher and member of the California Rangeland Trust board, gave an opening and spoke to his family's personal experience with conservation easements, which is a really great way to start a meeting for ranchers. We talked a little bit about the RCD's role in this, gave the program and encouraged participants to post their questions in the chat. Several. Jackie Flapp of the California Rangeland Trust then gave sort of a 101 on conservation easements, what they are and how they work. She was followed by David Raw, a professional appraiser, who spoke about the appraisal process. And this is someone we brought in for the webinar specifically because we kept having questions come up in the in-person workshops about appraisals. How exactly does this mysterious process occur? So we were able to address that. Dick Schneider on the ACRCD Board of Directors then spoke about the ALOSC, the funding for the workshops, and the funding available through this committee for conservation activities, including easements on local rangelands. That was followed by Fraser Schilling of UC Davis, who spoke about the work that he is leading with funding from this committee to update the decision support mapping tool and the focus on valuing wildlife habitat and other conservation resources on the landscape, and an invitation to participants to follow up with him and be part of the focus group. So, as I said, that concludes our series of workshop. Just as a little bit of some notes here about how we conducted outreach, if that is of interest to the committee.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We sent postcard mailers within a three county area, so Alameda, Contra Costa, and Santa Clara counties, because we know frequently working hipsters who own or operate lands in more than one county. Those postcards reached more than 700 addressees. We also used our email list. So the California Rangeland Trust operates an internal listserv, the RCD as well. And we reached out specifically to groups that we thought would have interested memberships, including the Contra Costa Alameda Cattlemen's Association, the California Rangeland Conservation Coalition, which published this latest webinar in their newsletter. It was announced at the Agricultural Advisory Committee, and we posted flyers at local feed stores where we thought we would have some eyeballs that might be interested, and did one-on-one outreach with personal contacts that we have with our staff and the ranching community. So the remaining item in the RCD's funding is administration of the $30,000 revolving fund issued by this committee to fund the initial property appraisals for serious folks who are serious about pursuing a conservation easement and are working with qualified land trusts. Yes.
Question before you go too much further.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get any feedback at all on how the people that participated found out about it? They get it online, they get it at the feed stores, they get it, how did they get the information? Do you have any idea?
Great question. I do not have that insight today. I'll check with the Rangeland Trust to see if that, not recalling, do you recall if that was part of our registration questionnaire? How people heard about that?
I don't remember. I think Robin would probably know. She'd be the best person, I think, to find the answer.
So I'm just curious to know, because if something more efficient than was,
yeah,
then that's the one you want to continue to use it and expand.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A little question on the registration website page. It would be good for them.
Question why you didn't, or did you consider your contacting ranchers in San Joaquin County? Borders on Alameda.
It's a great question. I think when we looked at our available contacts and reached out to our UC agricultural advisor about their feedbacks, we were somewhat limited in which counties we had information for. But it's a fair question.
Seems like San Joaquin County's whole ranchers. Whole ranchers.
Yeah, I actually sat in on the webinar yesterday as an interested observer and found it very interesting, very informative. I think anyone who attended who had not known about it before had questions, had a lot of questions answered. And I know I learned myself a few things. I liked everything, but especially Dr. Schilling's presentation on explaining ecosystem services to people who may not have known about it before. I know before I haven't heard of ecosystem services. That would have been helpful to me to see that. Because it's somewhat of a esoteric topic, but get your hands around, head around. I really enjoyed it. I was glad I attended. So 17 people sounds consistent with what you had at the previous two. So was it recorded? Are there any intentions to make it available?
Yes. And I'm so glad you asked, because that was a key thing I was supposed to mention here. It was recorded. It will be posted, you anticipate, sometime next week. And so that will remain available for viewership.
Yeah.
Did you get any feedback from the participants on what they valued, what they thought, what their interests were at all after the presentation you held?
Yesterday, no. It's a little bit tough in the webinar format for feedback in general, unless it's coming in the form of questions, which were limited by the end. I think in the first two in-person workshops, it was a little bit easier to interact with attendees and really see what they were connecting with and where their question areas were.
I also attended yesterday. It was very helpful, I think, especially having the appraiser there and describing the process. Because if I were a rancher, that's the part I'd really be interested in valuing my land.
Right.
It's great.
And hopefully we met that line of questioning in a way that people now feel like they understand better. So.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions? Mr. Schneider.
So the real open question is whether this will lead to any applications for grant funding for conservation easements. And certainly we'll report back to this committee if that happens. If there's any interest, follow-up interest from any of the participants at any of the three workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Let you know.
That would be great to know. Yes.
Has there been any from the first two since this one just happened?
We haven't gotten any specific requests to help with pursuing an easement, but we did get feedback, solicited feedback on the spot on the two in-person ones. So we have that information.
Yeah, I imagine this would take some time for someone to think through and talk to their family members.
Mm-hmm. And to cogitate for a while before going forward with any type of concrete action. Okay, any other discussion, questions? Thank you very much, Ian.
And thank you.
Appreciate it. Hey, we had a couple of public comments on item number four, Karen Sweet.
Good afternoon. I'm Karen Sweet. I'm a rancher also, and a participant in two of the workshops, as well as being on the Alameda County Resource Conservation District Board. And I just want to compliment the whole team's effort. And with the resources you were able to provide, the information and the participants were people that I didn't know in my lifelong work in the community, people who were now able to ask questions and learn. So I think the outreach reached some people that I personally couldn't knock on doors or reach out to myself. So I think the outreach was outstanding. The information was clearly presented. And so your efforts to work with the RCD, but also with the understanding the ranchers need to learn. And it will take some time. Those issues are kind of complex. Even when you think you're ready to make some serious family decisions, it's serious. It may take a couple of years of different levels of workshops before people finally say, okay, where's the grant form? I'll fill it out. So here, thank you.
Very much. Any online hands raised? Okay. Any other public comment in room here? Seeing none, I'll close public comments, close that item, and we can move on to item number five, presentation and consideration of grant application from California Rangeland Trust for a conservation easement for Sweet Ridge Ranch. Let's hear that Kat Webster will be presenting this.
Kat is online, so...
Okay.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to present. Let me just start my... Oh, are you going to control the PowerPoint?
If you prefer, we can let you know.
It doesn't matter. That's totally fine. Okay, so the Sweet Ridge Ranch project for consideration, if you want to go and switch the slide over. So just to give you a little bit of background on the California Rangeland Trust, we preserve working agricultural landscapes in California, specifically on properties that are grazed. We are a 501c3 public benefit nonprofit. We are an accredited land trust, which means we have to follow certain guidelines for our conservation easement process. We are 27 years in conservation, which is pretty exciting. We have helped 97 ranching families, totaling 416,000 acres conserved. Go ahead and switch slide. And then I'll go into the project overview. So the Sweet Ridge Ranch is a 160-acre privately owned working cattle ranch in Alameda County. It's only 3 miles from the city of Livermore. Successful completion of the project will preserve in perpetuity the 160 area acres of open space and rangeland habitat, protecting the ranch from future development. This will also help allow the family to keep the property in the family and keep it in ranching. Completion of the project will also conserve habitat for at least 6 known at-risk species. Go ahead and switch. And here's a photo from the ranch looking towards Patterson Pass Road, just showing the beautiful landscape. So the benefited species, according to CNDDB data that we have from CDFW, as well as information that we have from a conservation easement, actually just next door, is the California red-legged frog, the California tiger salamander, spadefoot toad, burrowing owl, San Joaquin kit fox, and golden eagle. This property is actually within the East San Francisco Bay Recovery Area for or unit for the California red-legged frog. It's actually in their core area. So what is actually pretty interesting is Alameda and Contra Costa counties contain the majority of known California red-legged frog localities within this unit. Which just goes to support that conservation easements in Alameda and Contra Costa counties are very important to put in place to benefit the species. The proposed easement will protect in perpetuity the rangeland that's relied heavily upon several bird species as well, and refugia for species such as the California red-legged frog and tiger salamander, like we already covered. What's also really interesting is that the conservation of the 160-acre ranch adds to the already conserved 523 acres around it, that are also ranched by the family. To the at least they ranch to the right and the left of the parcel. So it's all managed under very similar management practices, which we really like to see. It's not by any means something that we have control over or something that we look for in a project, but it does help support that it is being sustainably managed by the family. This ranching property does sit within the Altamont Pass Wind Resource Area, which spans 50,000 acres of rolling hills that are designated for wind energy production. So conversion to a wind farm is a possible threat. Go ahead and switch. And then I'll kind of briefly review the budget. So we are requesting $790,468. That covers the conservation easement value as well as transaction costs. The transaction costs cover our stewardship endowment, annual monitoring, record keeping, and legal enforcement to ensure the easement is upheld. Those for specifically for the stewardship endowment, those funds are invested, and then the earnings help cover the long-term obligations in perpetuity. So that's how we set it up. We invest it in an account and it grows. The reason that we are requesting the funds to cover the whole project is the economy is a scale challenge with this project. By covering both transaction costs and the purchase, the funds will make the conservation easement sale economically viable for the landowner. And I don't know if I don't want to speak for Charlie on this, but if he would like to add more, he can. The funds are to go back into the ranching operation, which again, that's not a requirement that CRT holds at all, but it is a good, it's something that we really like to see with these projects. it just adds a little bit of, I don't know, benefit to it. And then I'll open it up to questions if you guys have any.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that presentation. I'll go to the East County representatives who are here since they will be voting on this item. And would one of you prefer to go first? Ethan first?
Let's start off with one question.
Okay.
The amount you're requesting seems to be the total amount of money to get the purchase this easement. Usually, when our organizations come to us, they want us to partially fund, and then, for example, the city or the Dorney Valley Settlement Fund would be used to cover the rest of the money. And we're putting in maybe 50%, 60%. In my experience here, we've never had anyone come to us and ask for 100%. Do you have other funding sources?
We don't for this project. We can go to other funding sources. It has to do with the size of the project. We're hoping to keep it more financially viable to go to one funding source, but we can certainly look into more. There's a lot of issues with, we're having a lot of issues with funding sources right now with there not being a lot of money available. So we certainly will close this easement a lot faster for the landowners if we're able to go to one funding source rather than multiple. Unfortunately, there's a lot of uncertainty with our funding sources right now, with money being taken back from the federal government and so on and so forth. I'm sure you're familiar. So that's kind of what's fueling that desire to go after one source.
Thank you. I have some more questions, but I'll answer as later.
My question was, that was also my main question. I want to ask staff if we have, if this indeed is the first time that we're being asked for 100%, or is that in projects that we've approved?
We did do a quick review of the applications that the committee has approved since 2005, I think was the first one. And there was one grant that was approved for the city of Livermore in 2010, where the committee funded the full amount of the purchase price of the property with the on the condition that the city pay back half. The city was expected to generate some funds through sale of easements for mitigation. And the city did over the period of several years pay back the 50%. So except for that one instance where there was a delay or the committee funded the full amount up front and then was paid back, there have been no other applications where the full amount was funded, full 100%.
And it's not actually a criteria for approval.
Right. And that's just been the half facility the committee and in order to make the fund go a little further, they have looked favorably on applications that included other funding sources.
I don't know if this may be too much of a question, but have we rejected projects because they didn't come with matching funds?
I don't believe so. Do you remember a grant application that the committee rejected because they were requesting 100% of the funds?
Don't remember any.
I can't remember which one, but I think in the last year, the city of Livermore's come to your committee with like two sets of grant proposals, and one of those sets, I recall, somebody else remembers the details, but I think the committee requested an adjustment to the amount that the city was asking for to be more balance. So I think you requested that they find more funding from another source.
I do recall that as well. Yeah.
I'm not opposed to funding the whole proposal. I'm just trying to get clarity on the procedures and the history of funding proposals.
So it's not a rule or a criteria set out in the settlement agreement or anything like that. It's just been the practice of the committee.
Is there a timeline that you're working under? You said that you haven't been able to get any other sources of funding. It sounded like there's a specific timeline that you're trying to fulfill.
We don't have a timeline. Ideally, I would love to get every conservation easement project closed within 2 years if we could. But unfortunately, some drag on longer than others. If we were to have to go to an additional funding source, I could see this taking up to 4 years to close. If we were to be funded for the full amount, we could probably close this within 2 years, probably sooner, because we would start on the due diligence and everything that is needed, the reports ordering, all of that as soon as possible.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question. The you mentioned during the presentation the possibility that the owner might want to speak about something, or the owners. I know I have a request to speak on a comment card here for public comment, but did you intend for an owner's comments to be part of the presentation?
That wasn't something that we had discussed ahead of time. I just didn't want to make him feel like I was speaking for him.
Yeah, speak for them. Yeah. Okay, I understand. Okay, I certainly understand the preservation of native biological diversity and wildlife habitat, which is our first funding criterion. The PDF application that we received also mentions the significant visual and or non-motorized recreational value, and mentions hiking and bird watching. Do members of the public have access to that land to hike or bird watch?
We do not require public access in our easements. That is something that I have not discussed with the landowner, whether or not they would be open to a public access component of that. So that would have to be something that we'd discuss further.
Okay, so the fact that it is, quote, an ideal place for hiking and potential camping opportunities, and bird watching is, it exists currently, but that, and if that were part of the consideration for the second criterion, I'm unclear whether the committee should consider whether public access exists for those purposes, even though it would meet the criterion. We discussed, is that something that you thought about before? Can we just reach a conclusion on? As that you know of?
This is only the second application that the committee has considered for conservation easement.
Mm-hmm.
And with the first one that was approved, there was no requirement that there be any public access. So it was approved on the basis of preservation of
the first major criterion. Okay, I see. Yeah, and that's not an objection, simply questioning whether access is part of what we mean with regard to the second criterion. So I don't have other questions at this time. Proceed to public comment, and unless you do, okay.
You said there's other potentially other funding sources, something like the California Ranch Land Trust. Would they be interested in taking on some of the costs? Have you contacted them?
I'm sorry, would you repeat the question?
The California Ranch Land Trust, have you contacted them as a potential funding source?
We are the California Rangeland Trust. I'm presenting this on behalf of the California Rangeland Trust.
Okay. No further questions right now, so I'll see the public comment. And we have one speaker. Okay, great. We have two speakers. And we'll start with Karen Sweet.
And good afternoon. And when we look at that map that had a little jog in it around the green that indicated this particular property, three sides of this property already are under permanent easements. All three of them are under mitigation easements. And I happen to own one of the pieces of that green next door, another member of the Sweet family. And so while we think about the heritage of the Sweet family being here for more than 150 years or so on that piece of property, that's certainly not permanent conservation. And so the future is always uncertain until we put that conservation in place. And the Sweet family management property is certainly well regarded by all the farming extension and other folks, monitors who come into the property to monitor as well. This not only the easements where we were on that map, but we're also very, very close to lots of other conservation easements that are in place, mitigation and otherwise. So we know that the priority for you in open space and habitat conservation is key. And so this would just lock up one more little piece of property to achieve your goals. And I probably of those 27 multiple people that came to those workshops, the topic of public access would kill any interest for any future application. So I would probably discourage consideration of adding that as a guideline into accepting future easements, unless they're contiguous to park, and that might make more sense. So I would heartily encourage your participate, your support of the easement in full as presented. I see it, the range that trust is excellent to work with. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can I just ask a question related to that? The neighboring properties, which organizations currently are oversight of those properties in terms of inspection or following up to ensure, I don't know if the speaker knows or not, but you know? The neighboring properties mentioned were currently under preservation, and I'm just wondering if we know who those are, or if the organization follows up with inspecting properties.
Who's responsible for monitoring?
So those three that are most contiguous are being held by the Rangeland Trust with annual monitoring. Make sure we don't put a Walmart up there on top of Patterson Pass Road. And then our rangeland management is continuing to supply it to be good for the critters that exist there, including flowers, which obviously don't get as good now. But and then there's a little long strip along Patterson Pass Road that's an easement held by the Department of Conservation, and they're discussing moving it to another conservation organization as we speak.
Thank you. Move on to the next public speaker comment card I have here. Bill O'Lunn. Is that pronounced right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Good guess. I'm Phil O'Lunn. I'm speaking on behalf of, I'm on board Save Monte Alto. We sent a supporting letter for this proposal. And so I just wanted to reiterate that. And also, I'd echo Ms. Sweet's comments regarding public access. Having been to a couple of these Rangeland Trust seminars, one could tell just by the that subject to public access would really kill almost all of these deals. And let's face it, on some level, you know, East Bay Parks owns a lot of the land that none of us had public access to yet anyway. So, you know, I think putting those sort of criteria are a bit beyond the expectations, especially of an organization like the California Rangeland Trust. So the other thing is, you know, just in general, I think what you're experiencing as far as being asked to fund it all is you're essentially at the tip of the spear of a bunch of unprecedented stuff, because it was unprecedented in any administration prior to this to not support things like this from the federal level. So I think you're sort of, you're at the forefront of that. And I would encourage you to step up and do it, because somebody's got to step in if partying with a lot of money is beyond unwilling, is unsupportive of these sorts of things in general. I think locally we need to do these sorts of things. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I just want to make it clear, I'm not suggesting public access is a guideline. By any means, I'm almost sorry that I raised the question. Purely curiosity in my point. I would not expect public access to be a criteria at all. Okay, we have another speaker, Dick Schneider.
So I'm going to sit so I can not have to hold my papers up. So I just want to, I do recognize that this is a sole contribution and it's not a partner with anybody. In spite of that, I think that the committee should fund this. I strongly think that it should be funded. I want to point out how efficient the money is being spent. So the Dorain Ranch on Pearl Hollow Road was the only other conservation easement that's been funded by a committee. And it cost $3,082 per acre. This is $3,724 per acre for permanent protection. Compare that to the acquisitions that this committee has funded recently. The Quinn property north of Garaventa Hill, just 41 acres, $38,740 per acre. The Gekin Road property, we have north of the Cross property, Capsmont Pass Road, $15,854 per acre. That was 82 acres. The Collier Canyon property, $34,795 per acre, 86 acres per tent. This is $3,724 per acre for permanent conservation protection. So it's an order of magnitude less than acquiring land per acre. So it's a very efficient use of the money. Second, this is permanent protection, and the stewards of the land are going to live there, and they're going to keep it that way, and it's going to be monitored annually. So that if you look at these other most recent properties, mostly to the city of Livermore, it's not clear how they're going to be monitored and how they're going to be protected, and whether it's going to be more money is going to have to be spent to hire Dry Valley Conservancy to monitor the easements and protect the land, or some other entity, or just the upkeep on it when it's open up to visitation. So in terms of conservation, I think this is a really efficient use of the committee's money. I hope they would do it. And do you think we should try and look for partners going forward, but that shouldn't be a requirement?
Thank you. Are there any other raise hands online? Speakers.
During the meeting, well, Ben would like to speak on this item. Please raise your hand.
Any other people in the room here who wish to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll close public comments and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Again, I'm going to be East County representatives, so both of you, go first.
Phil answered my question about whether this is a general situation with the current funding climate, or if this is something specific to the property, and it sounds like it's sort of the place that we're in currently, which is sort of concerning, and says this may be an issue we face for some time with future projects. But I do really appreciate all the speakers for their support and articulating why they think we should fund this project. So I really appreciate that.
I think Dick Schneider made a number of really good points. In terms of not just looking at the total funding amount, but the funding per acre And that puts it into a better context than just looking at a project that's 38,000 or 700 and something thousand.
Okay. All right, thank you. I have a question just about the transaction costs being included in the amount of the grant. I understand why. I understand transaction costs are significant, but is that something that the I know we aren't restricted by the funding criteria regarding that, but is that a precedent setting thing going forward? And if it is it okay? Not okay. I guess
we have comment on by staff.
On but that? I believe with the previous conservation easement that was approved, transaction costs would be. This would not set the precedent.
Okay. All right. Is there any other discussion? Stop again. Time. Seeing none, we can proceed a motion if anyone wishes to make a motion.
Yeah, make the motion to approve the project as requested.
Second.
Okay, proceed to a vote, and noting that the East County representatives are the voting members of the body for this question. I'm from the West County, so I will not participate. So roll call, please.
All right, Supervisor Hubbard excused. Council Member Wong?
Aye.
And Member First.
Aye.
Carries.
Motion carries. Okay. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda. That is item number 6, presentation and consideration of a grant application from California Ranger Networks. Presentation and consideration of $25,000 consultant proposal for East of Greenville Conservation Study in compliance with the settlement agreement. This is Tri Valley Conservancy, is Wester, so we have presentations.
Well, the PowerPoint is coming up. I just want to remind the committee that this is a proposal for consultant services as opposed to a grant application. So this falls within the 5% per year that the committee is allowed to work toward consultant services to help you
set priorities for us. Can we get a clarification? We are previously approved about $247,000 to your budget over 3 years. Did that take up all of our 5%, or there's still some wiggle room?
There's still some remaining. The previous contract that we approved for the project with UC Davis for ecosystem services was approved to be extended over 3 funding years. So that allows about $40,000, assuming, and this is all based on since 2025 is not over yet, so we don't know exactly how much money is going to come in the fund this year. But assuming it's about the same as the amount that came in 2024, about $40,000 in funds left in that 5% for each of those years going forward.
And I recall asking at the time the invoicing that we received, whether the $240,000 approximate dollars would be invoiced equally, invoice is the correct term, claim, over those 3 years. And I assume that's what we're assuming to come up with $40,000 per year. Okay. Are we ready for the presentation?
Yes, thank you.
Please introduce yourself and proceed.
I'm Rebecca Spector. I'm the executive director of Tri Valley Conservancy, and I just started in September and I'm very happy to be here. As you probably know, we're a nonprofit planning trust based in Livermore, and we are from the
about season one for the years. And our mission is to promote economically sustainable and inclusive waters, but also to increase permanently protected, biologically diverse open spaces. We have a history of collaboration and stakeholder enablement meetings. Most recently, that includes Meadow V, which was the SWIR initiative in Livermore, and also the recent East County Area Plan amendments, where we worked with stakeholders over many years to get to that point, which was passed by the Alameda County Board of Supervisors a few months ago. So the area we're looking at is east of Greenville, which is east of Greenville Road up to the South Bay Aqueduct, between 580 to the north, and the intersection of Aqueduct Greenville Road to South. And the reason that TBC developed a stakeholder group in 2024 is that there's been some consideration of changing uses of the area under the city of the more general plan update process. And so the board of directors at TBC thought it would be a good time to bring together stakeholders as well with other projects. So we've had about 20 participants involved in the process. Some people are here today. It includes local winery owners, east of Greenville landowners, representatives from Friends of Livermore and local nonprofits and industry groups, as well as representatives of the city of Livermore and Alameda County. The group decided to agree to have TBC commission a conservation value study of the area. And the goal of the study is to evaluate the conservation values in the unincorporated area. And we went through a request for proposals process, and we landed on Monk and Associates to be selected to conduct the study. And they're a biological firm with a long history of biological services work, specifically in this Livermore, south of Livermore region. So Monk and Associates has come up with their study methodology, which we have shared with the committee. It includes assessing historical and current land uses, biological resources on the parcels, reviewing local plans, such as the East Alameda County Conservation Strategy and other plans, consideration of soil types and the presence of federally regulated waters, and the resources that they'll be looking at, wetlands and waterways, special status botanical occurrences and habitat, special status wildlife occurrences and habitat, potential wildlife corridors, potential trail corridors, agricultural lands, land use designations, and existing lands. The outcomes of the study are anticipated to be a discussion of the suitability of uses in the area, which may include agricultural, agriculture, recreational, special status, species habitat preserve, or wetland preserve uses. And it's really intended to provide a framework document to assist decision makers and the public on the existing values and appropriate land uses in the area. I also want to add that this will complement the recent web tool that this committee approved, the UC Berkeley, UC Davis rather, study that, UC Davis web tool that this committee just approved. It will complement that and will actually serve as a provide data for them to use within that tool. So we see it as complementary. This project aligns with the committee's priorities. Including identifying native biodiversity value, identifying visual or non-diverse recreational value, studying and providing recommendations for potential corridors, for trails, and other uses, its strategic use of land protection, partnering with local stakeholders, strategically guide the process, and then prior natural resources studies have analyzed values were instrumental in prioritizing resources and values of North Livermore. We have additional funding sources from other stakeholders, and so obviously we're not selling the land, but in terms of landowners, we're interfacing with the landowners and stakeholders to ensure their engagement and involvement in the process. And that includes there are actually a number of landowners in the area who willingly are opening up their properties for Monk Associates to go out to do evaluation, which is really great. So we are requesting $25,000 from this committee. Tri-Valley Conservancy is pleased to put up $25,000 of matching, and Friends of Livermore has graciously committed $10,000 to the study, which will cover the whole project cost of $16,000. So thank you. Any questions for me?
It's also being East Town Health, her to be this kind of representative here first.
Go back to that previous slide.
Sure.
the funding stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So, because that's a little different from the application that was in our package.
Yeah. So, since the application, we have put in a request with the city of Livermore for $5,000. And I don't think we didn't get an absolute rejection, but I don't think we can count on that. So, I wanted to be clear with this committee that TBC is able to make up that $5,000 if the city is not able to contribute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's worth the question.
Yeah, I just said that this project is complementary to the $247,000 grant that we just gave to Schilling and the UC Davis people. How is it complementary? Seems like that their development of the evaluation tools stands on its own.
So my understanding of reading their proposal, I'm certainly not an expert in the proposal, was that they will be inserting data into the tool, and this could be a point of data that could be used for the grant. So they may be doing some surveying, but it's not clear to me how much surveying they will be doing. That they will be using a lot of data information that they'll insert into the tool. So this would actually be a piece of data that they could insert. And this is happening now. So somebody that can put in right away.
The Munkin Associates are right now doing work that could be given to Schilling's group at UC Davis. Not sure how much value added it would be. When Munkin Associates provides the data to Schilling, as Munkin Associates, I understand they're going to come up with a summary of the information in September
as a goal.
And they would be making judgments at all or evaluations at all? Or are they going to give raw data to Schilling? In other words, are they going to say that this area or this parcel has very high conservation value?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to say this other area has very, very low conservation value? If that's their summary, are they going to stop there, or are they going to say it's therefore open to other uses if it's got low agriculture, low conservation value? In other words, there's a real danger here that the Measure D will be broken and the city of Livermore will annex land east of Greenville. And you specifically mentioned industrial, and it's in your proposal, and it's been mentioned by the city that they have an interest in industrial development east of Greenville, which would break Measure D. My concern is that this committee should not be helping anybody break the urban growth boundary. And I'm worried that Munkin Associates' conclusions and summaries are going to set the stage for the city trying to break the urban growth boundary. Whereas Schilling Associates are saying, here are some of the data.
So I think the way I'd answer that is Munkin Associates are biologists. So it's not, I don't foresee the study saying this parcel is ideal for industrial uses at all. That's not their role. Their role is to identify conservation values, which I think is critically important to evaluate those now before the city level, so that we have documentation data from what's out there. We've gone out there, Diana and I, and staff with biologists, and there's a lot of wetland and wildlife habitat, and we want that now, so that there is that data out there. I don't think this is not a political document at all. It's the document conducted by biologists specifically to evaluate conservation values. So I actually think
committee to the city want to have in now. It's not going to make political determinations about where best releases will be made. I think this actually supports what you're saying, of we really want to document the conservation values. And the other thing I do want to note, just looking at the proposal, you see Davis' proposal in terms of developing the tool, they say it will include literature searches and developing a model approach. And so to me, that means entering, using data, and I mean, I work with a lot of these universities when they do this, that's, it's using data as a tool. I'm not sure if they're even gonna be going out in the field. They may, but right here it says they're primarily gonna be using data. So this is a critically important piece of data if we're gonna be identifying where the wetlands are, where the habitat areas are in this area. So I think it's really kind of a benefit of their use.
I had a question similar to that. Well, I had thought about that same thing. Because it mentions in the application, objective purpose of this work is to identify the best and most efficient use of all lands evaluated. So I guess that's subject to some bias on the part of the person doing the evaluation. I can't imagine that I don't know every single detail about this land here, but it looks like it's pretty open right now. No significant developments or industrial facilities there. So,
there are some illegal uses that the county is not enforcing.
Okay. So, considering current uses, even the illegal ones, is it possible that best and most efficient use could end up being something other than conservation?
Well, I don't think that's for us to decide. And that's certainly not the, it's not the role of TDC to decide that, and certainly not the role of biologists to decide that. I think the biologist's job is to identify which areas of land there are wetlands and wildlife habitat, agriculture. And which areas aren't suitable for agriculture, which is a biological determination. So, you know, I don't think they're going to be making recommendations about uses other than that.
I wouldn't use the word, I myself was asking about recommendations. And I believe that the results, the evaluation would be that, to be heavily toward the conservation side of thinking, but the application does say to identify the best and most efficient use of all lands evaluated. So maybe there's not a recommendation, but I would expect some kind of identification of the use of the lands. And so I'm not trying to object, I'm just trying to clarify.
Right.
And it all currently, as was mentioned, currently there are a lot of wetlands and biodiversity considerations. So, I would expect that to first come at the top, but I guess I'm wondering about people who may disagree, and I know lots of people disagree with many, many things, with the best and most efficient use of all lands evaluated, disagree with the outcome of the report, and I guess that's to be expected. I'm not trying to influence one or the other, but I'm just trying to think, once we have the outcome, the results, what happens with it next? And you describe complementing the existing studies and projects. So thinking about other potential. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are all excellent questions, and we have thought about them and talked about them with the stakeholder group as well as the UTC. It's a study that I think is critically important. It doesn't exist now. And if the city is going to be making the determination, so I think, David, to add to your point, what if the city, if there was a ballot initiative and the voters voted to expand the city limit and there wasn't a study? We have the study, we will have a study now to show what's out there and what the conservation value is, as opposed to if the city, and I know somebody's here from the city, I'm not trying to say the city's going to do any of this, these are just hypothetical, but if that were to happen, we want the city to have as much information about the conservation values as possible. And we see that as BDC's role is we want to protect land, and we want to work with stakeholders that are interested in that, but we also include other stakeholders that have other interests as well, because we think that's really important in the region when we go forward to bring together a diverse group of stakeholders. So some people at the table are people that are against development, and there are people at the table who would like to see development, and we're trying to hold the space for both, but the study is independent and it's neutral and it's a conservation value study. That is the basis of the study, and I think it fits 100% in the priorities of the study.
Lincoln Associates have a dialogue currently with Dr. Shulman.
I can ask. I know that they work very closely with a lot of those biologists, so I can absolutely
I asked too many curiosity type questions.
I think one reason we also wanted to bring this to the committee is because we think it's important to also have buy-in with this committee and the public. So that's one of the reasons why we came here today.
Do you have a sense of the timeline and how long it would take to do the study?
So they've already started the study. And so we have been, we wanted to get the study commissioned and we haven't paid for all of it yet, but we were hoping to get funding along. Sometimes you move forward with something, not knowing where all the funding is going to come from. So they are, it is underway and it's anticipated that it'll be done in the fall. We hope September. And they really wanted to, they started early in the spring so that wanted them to get out the lands not too long after the rain so that there's more biological. They were able to see biological activity before it got to go.
Any further discussion from the committee? Okay, I can open this up for public comment now. I don't have any comment cards.
I'd like to, I'm sorry, I shouldn't put the other
notes. Mr. Phil Long.
Yeah. And Phil Long, speaking on as a board member, that shows the actual property in question.
So, our number one concern as we've moved south and focusing on the entire Diablo Range, say Mount Diablo, is this corridor. There's less than 8 miles narrow neck from here to the other side of the Altamont Pass that if the wildlife corridors are lost, it wipes out any sort of biological diversity north of here. So what's puzzling to me is why wouldn't you want this information? Number one, because if you don't want that information, then why did it make sense to have wildlife cameras under the freeway? Because that supplied information that it could have shown that there was no wildlife there. But what it showed that there's wildlife coming through there. That's why you look for this information. And we strongly support projects like this. We think this will prove that this needs to be retained as a wildlife corridor. And I personally, not speaking as a member of City Mount Diablo, I don't think the Livermore City Council is going to vote to go east of there. The people I talked to weren't interested. I didn't talk to Christy about this, but other people, including staff, weren't. So it's a bit of a straw man on some level, but you have to look at it. So that's part of the process. But we strongly support this for the reasons that there is conservation value here. We know there is because this is one of the major wildlife crossings in the entire Altamont Pass. And this is a necessity to conserve it in the long run because that's how they get from the freeway south and vice versa. So we are very supportive of this type of work. We do it. The TDC has stepped up already to get it going.
Thank you. I might just comment that
At least for myself, I do ask during the questioning period lots of questions that may that have more to do with due diligence type questions rather than opining on what I think of the proposal. So during discussion after public comment, more of that. So I see another hand from the floor, Mr. Schneider. Speak.
Thank you. Just a couple of concerns. One, there's a couple of errors in the location, which you may already know about, but you have other people brief you before you submit. Don't need to go into those. But one of the things that bothered me in the summary of the application is the value of it would be in part, it's potentially to provide compensatory mitigation values. And to me, that term means there's going to be development and you're going to compensate for that development somewhere else. And here's what you have to pay to do it. Compensatory mitigation is required by the agencies, Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, California Department, Fish and Wildlife. This study is not going to come up with compensatory mitigation values. Those are going to be done by the agencies using their own data. And I don't think this study is going to help. And the idea that it's going to be able to help, I think, is just going to fuel the idea that it's okay to develop as long as we compensate for that development somewhere else, paying this fee. Obviously, development is much more, generates a much greater return on investment than keeping the land as open space. And so people will willingly pay the compensatory mitigation, unless it's extraordinarily high, if they get to develop and just be the cost of doing business. So I'm concerned about that. That's it.
Okay, thank you. I see no other hands for speakers in the room, nor any other cards. Do we have raised hands online?
There are no raised hands.
Hands online? No other public comments. We are back to the meeting for discussion. Well, being from East, I mean, getting to the ideas expressed before about something being, you know, this being something the community would value and find really useful to have. Generally, I do find it that way, but I am not a voter on this proposal since I am from West County against the East County item.
And actually, you do get to vote on this item because it's not a grant
application. Oh, it's not a grant application for the, I see. Thank you for correcting me. So I will get to vote on this along with the two other members of the committee who are present. I'll entertain a motion if anyone wishes to make one. Okay, I'll move approval.
Sorry, can I ask, can I hear a little more about but. Your thoughts regarding and after discussion with the applicant regarding whether you think this is the proposal for this study is done in good faith, or do you still feel like you're?
I think it's done in good faith, but there's a number of red flags in the project objective that really worried me. Dick Schneider pointed out some of them. The purpose of this work is to identify the best and most efficient use of the lands evaluated. The study is intended to provide a framework document to assist decision makers and public on the existing values of the area and appropriate land uses. And then above that, it says the work provides developers, housing developers, commercial developers, pipeline companies with the ability to develop their lands and yet at the same time protect other lands in the vicinity. It seems to me a way, a very quiet way of saying that their outcomes of this project are very likely to help the city rationalize breaking the urban growth boundary and developing commercial and industrial out on the east of Greenville, and I can't support them.
I think my thought is that more information is useful, and what they've already started the study, and I've heard a lot about there's an important wildlife corridor and all this, and so I guess I'm sort of already jumping ahead to the conclusion, but I want to feel like I'm supporting something that's not in good faith. And so that's why I'm interested in your thoughts on
that. Well, the speaker from Mont Diablo or associated with Mont Diablo said this is a very critical wildlife corridor. But if this area is developed by industrial commercial, you're going to lose your wildlife corridor, or it's going to be so narrow that the wildlife aren't going to want to use it.
And we fight that tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm.
We have to bear with you to fight it tooth and nail. I mean, nobody's fought this stuff in Contra Costa more than we have. So our track record of 50 years speaks for itself in that regard.
I think that's my thought, is that this is a way to document that. So you can say, this is, here's the evidence that's an important wildlife corridor, and we can document that. It's hard to make that case. That's where I'm leaning in terms of, but I do see the concerns that you have with looking at the application.
Yeah, I looking at the wording in the application itself, the project objectives that which you mentioned, seems to me that the description of Monk and Associates' type of work is just that it describes the work they've done in the past and what the uses of the work have been, and potentially dependent upon whoever's employing them for their services. It doesn't seem to me that description of their type of work means that is the same work that they're going to do here for this study, or are doing. Nevertheless, this gets to kind of what I was getting at before, uses by other individuals or stakeholders, such as developers. But it's qualified here by the statement that this would enable, in the past, in their previous work, it's enabled development to occur with the desire and the intent to protect other lands in the vicinity, support special status species. So I think that's a concern, but in regard to what the comment just made from someone in the audience, the stakeholders, existing stakeholders fighting tooth and nail to prevent any type of development on sensitive land, which we're trying to preserve, is a good one. So I'm not prepared to deny it based on that one vote, make my vote dependent upon those statements in the project objective.
It wouldn't be development on sensitive land. It would be potential development on land that has been determined to have very low agricultural and conservation value.
So which potentially could be an outcome of study, is that what you're saying?
It could be that the half of us or part of the east of Greenville would be considered by various interests to be worthwhile development. So many of the information given by this study and any evaluation and any conclusions will add ammunition to the people that want to break the urban growth boundaries.
So, further comments, discussion?
And I'd like to just put permanent easements all around Livermore. And so this is right to Livermore. And to me, it's a step towards that, but not knowing what the outcome is gonna be. It does seem like you have to study it to know.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with Chrissy's last statement. Study it to know. Acquire information that we don't currently have. So I'll proceed with a motion to that the committee approve this proposal.
In a second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We have a discussion. Let's do a roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Halbert excused. Councilmember Wall?
Aye.
Councilmember Nygaard?
Aye.
Member First?
No. Okay, the motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Proceed on the agenda to item number 7. Is presentation and consideration of a $500,000 grant proposal for the 32-acre Altamont Hills property in unincorporated North Livermore. And again, have the conservation manager, UBC, here. Thank you for what you're about to tell us, and please introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. I am Zach Roberts, the conservation manager at Fargo-Brimsey. We are presenting a grant application for a parcel in. So we can skip forward a little bit. You've already got a small introduction to our organization, but our main priorities are agricultural open space, view shed, and other things around the Tri Valley area. We currently hold most of our conservation easements in North. The parcel that we are interested in acquiring is a 32-acre parcel north of 580. This parcel came before this committee last year for potential funding, and this the applicant has withdrawn their application, and so currently the team still sees this as a huge conservation priority, both for ourselves as well as other entities, conservation and city entities in the area. And this parcel is part of the East Alameda County Conservation Strategy Zone, Conservation Zone 5, which calls out a couple of conservation priorities, including the Arroyo Wasp Cetus, which goes along the property, and the potential or now identified wildlife crossing underneath the freeway that would come out onto this property. So the conservation values that we've identified for the property are potential wildlife habitat in the space and view shed, and it's adjacent to an identified wildlife crossing underneath by maybe. As the Honorable Representative already mentioned, the authority of East Alameda County is a part of the Diablo Range. We see this entity or this property as instrumental to preserving the stretch of regional wildlife connectivity. If you can click just once, you can see the property is actually in, and one more time, the narrowest passageway through the Diablo Range. So as was mentioned, around 7 miles across. And so, you know, this area is vital to being able to get north-south crossing for wildlife. And if you would advance forward, the UC Davis Road Ecology Center performed a wildlife crossing study, which was funded partially by this committee, of a wildlife crossing that is very near to this property. And so it showed that there was a wildlife movement of up to 13 species underneath and using this property as well across the north-south migration route. And so they were able to identify that they were mostly native species using this. In addition to that, this has been identified by the getting the database name, but as potential habitat are for California red legged frog and California tiger sail mender as well, which were not identified as part of the study, but this study did show that, you know, the undercrossing under the Greenville area was vital to be able to protect. And so we see this property as adjacent to that wildlife crossing, as preserving the ability for animals to get to that crossing and utilize it across the freeway. And so this property is a little bit of an island, but has some complementary land uses around it for migration of different species. So you can see to your top left is the Brushy Peak Regional Preserve, and below that is the property owned by Bay Area Rapid Transit right now, so BART, but contains a lot of the Arroyo Las Positas, which goes under the road to the west of the property, but would be able to be utilized by animals to be able to use that crossing basically onto the Altamont Hills property shown in yellow to access the wildlife crossing, as well as the properties to the west as well. So the direct neighbors of the Altamont Hills property is Caltrans and right of way, as well as access road for the Department of Water Resources. And then Alameda County owns a lot of the right of way along the Mont Pass. So this is a little bit of an island, but definitely has complementary land uses around it that support its ability to remain a high conservation value area. So you can TVC in acquiring this property would be looking towards the long-term conservation of the property. So as a part of our acquisition process, a land management plan would be created for the property. So there are some identified improvements that we would be looking for, including implementing grassland management on the property, removal of invasive species. There is some human uses on the property that would need to be removed. So that would be, there's trash and dumping adjacent to the property and in surrounding properties that we would hope to have removed. And then, as you can see, there is a cross etched into the side of the hillside. Although that is not a direct conflict with the conservation values that we're looking to protect, it would most likely be managed through grazing to, you know, for the eventual fading of that symbol. So we would not be maintaining it. And there are a couple of stakes and other items that are left on the property that would need to be cleaned up as well. And then our main goal after, you know, kind of getting it up to a baseline level would be to have the land management plan enhance the conservation values on the property. So the identified habitats on the property, as well as any other, you know, complementary habitat enhancements, whether that's for the arroyo on the adjacent property or to facilitate, you know, the wildlife crossing on the property. And so this will be a collaborative process with local experts, organizations, stakeholders. There's a lot of priority documentation from different organizations, whether it's East Bay Region Park District, LARPD, City of Livermore, Alameda County, that identify this as a conservation priority. So we would want to be able to have input from all of those stakeholders of how they would like to see this property preserved and enhanced for the future. And you can see in this as well that this is has a very high view fit, or I guess access to be able to see the property. 580 is going east to west in this photo, well, it's diagonal in this photo, but is going east to west and is seen very visibly from the freeway. So that is another reason why we are looking to have this preserved, because it is, you know, a symbol of our area, to be able to, you know, showcase our commitment to open space preservation and agricultural preservation in the area. And so we are looking to this committee for half of the purchase price of the property. So we are also applying for funding from the Wildlife Conservation Board. And then we are sourcing funding for due diligence and closing costs as well from multiple sources. So this committee, we're asking for the total purchase price or the total project cost of $1,050,000 and a total purchase price of $500,000 for that purchase price of $500,000. And thank you very much.
Okay, I won't see your questions.
I believe this property has come before this committee, or this is the one that was known as the Cross property. I did happen to watch that meeting virtually, and there were a lot of speakers. Has anyone reached out to, have we heard from that group, or what are their current thoughts about this?
I was one of the speakers, so I didn't know. Yeah, in terms of public support, I think the meeting was concerned about the future management of the property, and so in future conversations. Conversations that we've had more recently, there is TDC has a long history of land stewardship as well as land ownership. It has not been seen as comfortably old for TDC to that mission. And I do believe that most of the and nothing, we're looking for.
I guess the question is that they're still looking to maintain the horse here.
As far as we know, that tenant is no longer on the property and is no longer maintaining the property. So when I went out and performed a site visit, most everything was dismantled from it. So it is a symbol that is etched into the landscape. So it has not been stored or planted in any way. Would be to restore that area. But far as the landowner has or the broker has told us they're no longer being paid.
Guess we'll see if anyone speaks in public comment.
Questions?
Yeah, that's first of all, I appreciate your presentation. I've been very hesitant to approve this when it came before us last year. Very happy to see the TVC is going to be potentially going to be taking responsibility for this area, putting an easement on, I assume.
Yeah, so as long as we would hold it, we would be able to hold an easement with ourselves. But if we were to sell it to an appropriate entity, such as, then there would be an easement placed on the property.
You didn't really mention it, but if you could go back to the slide, I think it was which said future. I don't write it down, but the slide that showed the cross, future management. Yeah, that one there. Thank you. My concern being that there's last year and again this in this presentation they talk about recreational value, and there's virtually no access for the public to get to this property except when you and I spoke. You called out that the far right upper right corner has a turnaround and parking area, potential parking area. Off the road, it's the Altamont Pass Road.
Yes.
And so the public could actually access this by foot, that potential parking lot area. So we wouldn't expect the public to go underneath 580 as much as drive on Altamont Pass Road, park, and then get access to the also the Cross property, the Altamont Hills property, and then potentially maybe access Brushy Peak from there somehow. So it's in other words that the public access is not dependent on the public going underneath 580, which is going to be a wildlife crossing. But the public could have a parking lot in the upper right with those white areas up there, and then access for recreational values. Point that out.
Yes, and that is technically off of the property. So it is the maintenance law for the Department of Water Resources. So should there be recreational value, should there be recreational access in the future, it would be a collaborative partnership between large communities. And you can also see the road that comes right parallel to the freeway there that is on the subject property and also provides access to water resources, but also leads to that crossing road.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, are the is the proposal substantially similar to what we had approved prior to the city legal home? Where it's for the intended uses and whatnot?
Yes. The intended priority is open space preservation. With the added element of knowing that there is a wildlife crossing local to that area, and we believe that it's supportive of that crossing. So it has relatively the same goals as the county's or the city of Livermore's proposal.
And I understand, based on the letter here from City of Livermore, that they have no further and will have no further interest, whatever, in management and pursuing this. Is that correct? Your understanding as well?
Yes. Yes. So we've met with the city about this property and about the goals in the area. And so that was, out of those discussions, TDC decided to pursue the property since it's still within our conservation priority area, still within, a lot of organizational priority areas to have conserved. And so that's our intention. I think no matter what we'd like to be, see the property preserved, people for ourselves.
And what was the dollar amount again? It's being requested?
$500,000.
Half of the cost.
Yes. So the same or very close to what we approved before for the city with them. We do have a public speaker. Any further questions? We do have a public speaker on this, Mr. Bill Olam. The public comment.
Sir, I'm not used to getting up and agreeing with things so often. So this is so St. Monte Avlo, it also in our letter supports this purchase. We were really happy that this is happening. This fits the wildlife corridor issues. Actually, I could remember Bruce's notion about having a potential Brushy Peak staging area at some point in the future. That'd be pretty neat to be saying part of this right now, but I thought it was a really good idea. So we're glad TBC is pushing forward this and support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Another public comment? Schneider?
Same card. My concern is about the wildlife crossing and the public access. And if the proposed trail, I know that very well, the Cultural Advisory Committee is supporting a trail along the South Bay Aqueduct. And where the trail go in the same place as the wildlife crossing, would those be separated? I'm concerned that the public use of the trail is going to be inimical to the value as a wildlife crossing. A lot of animals will not use the same area as people.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have a designated trail like identified for the property. I mean, we see recreational value for the property, but A lot of our conservation uses the values that are ordered, so they need to be, you know, complementary to each other and not, you know, inhibiting each other. So I think, you know, in terms of, you know, a future trail, it would be a collaborative process, and, you know, being Alameda County Resource Conservation District has done a lot of work that we have in that area. There's a whole study, there's, you know, whole priority that identifies. So, you know, the decision of if any public access would be granted to property, it would not be done in a vacuum.
And actually, the crossing under the freeway is on Caltrans property. And so it would be the connection with where would the connection be with the cross property could be further to the west of the railroad crossing. I mean, that's where I see the wildlife crossing, where the cameras were, is on the east side of the railroad track. So it's in the entire, well, that entire area. Maybe you know more than I do about exactly where the cameras were. But like, maybe.
Can you put that slide back up, the one we were looking at before? The property.
So the county has a right-of-way along Altamont Pass Road, which goes under the freeway.
Which you may want to go back to slide into. The surrounding land uses may just be nice like Ken.
Right, where the sort of large line, thin line is, I think that is on county property. So maybe it's to the left of that.
The more red that's thin line. So that is actually Union Pacific. So that's the rail line.
That's the rail line. So the county's property is directly to the west of that. Immediately west.
Yes.
So in theory, there could be two crossings under the freeway, one on the county's property and the other on the east side of the tracks. And maybe the wildlife crossing and the people crossings can be separated. I don't know if there's a good connection with the Altamont Hills property from the west side of the tracks. Anyway, I'm just
a little bit of
getting ahead of ourselves. I realize, you know, it's important to keep these things in mind because, you know, certainly from my personal point of view and from presumably the committees, which the first priority is habitat, second priority is non-motorized recreation. Having the wildlife crossing is the most important thing to protect.
We do have another public speaker. Do you have a question about this topic?
Okay. I'll speak after this.
Okay. Next public speaker is Kelly Amroon.
There are two conflicts that are happening here and that also happening elsewhere. One is just the crossings for people, crossings for animals, and keeping them separate. And so that's good that they would be separate. Hopefully. As far as this property goes, as far as, you know, recreational access, I could see a walking trail all around the outside of the property, or maybe parked on the road and then on the property, on the county road, whatever it is, so that people could go up there, park, walk all the way around if they wanted to, or whatever. It wouldn't be too much impact, I think. And then this, the other conflict that I see is, this is just another example of it, was in Fremont. Fremont, if you look at the hills to the east of the Fremont, they bought a couple of thousand acres. The city of Fremont owns a couple of thousand acres. You look up there, you think it's a park. No, a lot of it is, most of it is city-owned land, and they put on the drawings, they say their zonings many years ago, decades ago, they zoned it as open space dash park. And when you go and ask them, well, where's the hiking trail? Where's the the park part of it. They forgot about it. And these conflicts arise for a very good reason. The cities, when they go out, or whoever, when they go out and asking people to pay for these things, they say, oh, look, we're going to give you a park, we're going to give you a hiking trail, we're going to give you recreation, we're going to give you all this stuff. And then when they get it, they say, oh, we're just going to sit on it. And because, you know, trails or parks, whatever, are a little bit of trouble. So, you know, it's nice that at least you're thinking about the recreational things, because very often you just want the taxpayers to pay and not really have any access at all. Thanks.
Thank you for that comments. See other speakers in the room. So do we have any raised hands online?
I have no raised hands.
Okay. Seeing no further speakers, I'll close public comment, bringing back to the committee.
I have some of the same concerns that Dick Schneider does, but to me, they're really two separate issues. It brought the Altamont Hills property does not come to the undercrossing. It's public land. And so to me, it's two separate issues. Or do we want the cross property as an easement and retained as open space? And then the second issue, if and when it ever comes up, is how do we get the wildlife underneath the existing undercrossing, and who will own the land and who will manage it? But to me, it's two separate issues now, and that's why I'm supporting the acquisition of the Altamont Hills property.
Mm-hmm.
I supported as the critical link towards species migration range.
Okay, and you know, I put out the same comment that there was an allusion earlier to maybe getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, perhaps so, but I think that makes it clear what we're voting on here. And that I don't have anything further. I do support it myself. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to make the motion to approve the TBC's acquisition of the Altamont Hills property.
Okay, we have a motion made and seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, let's proceed to a roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Howard excused. Councilmember Wong?
Aye.
Councilmember Knightley, I think you're not voting on this one, right?
Oh, that's correct.
Member First?
Aye.
Okay, so we have two votes in favor, no votes against. One absent. The motion carries. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's proceed to item number 8, Tesla Park State Planning Updates, an informational item. Mr. Schneider, are you presenting on this or
something? Yes, I see your name here. Just a little bit of information. So there's been no change in the schedule of what the department is doing. In theory, going to be a public workshop sometime in the fall or maybe in the late summer, but it hasn't been announced yet. The only thing that's new at this point is that Friends of Tesla Park have gotten a meeting set up with Director Quintero, Director of State Recreation Parks Department, for August 25th. And a contingent of people are going to be going up to Sacramento to meet with him and to explain why Friends of Tesla Park and this committee believes a reserve is the proper classification for this park unit.
When did you say that, Peter?
Pardon me?
When did you say the visit?
August 25th.
August 25th. Okay.
You have 45 minutes left.
That's impressive. So a lot more than 15, then. I know I've done in the past with other things. Okay. Are there any questions raised by the committee? Okay, this being an informational item, hold any? Well, this public comment is open now. Any public comment? Can't raise on? None? Okay, I'll close public comment. And we'll close item 8. And see, the next item on the agenda.
I was going to say it's update of available funding.
Oh, update. Okay. Update of available funding from Canada.
It's case you couldn't find your agenda.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So the most recent numbers that I have are from May. So it's not much of an update from last time. I apologize for that. In the eastern area, we have 21,998,732, some change. And in the western area, $3,366,874, and some change.
Thank you very much. Questions, discussion? And we'll proceed on to item number 10. Thank you for that. Ten future agenda items and speakers. Leave last time, David, do you know? Remember first, you mentioned Mr. Bob Brown, I believe, as a potential suggestion speaker. Is that right? M3 agreement?
Yeah, that was Sean Wilson mentioned speaking with him to see all kind of speech. He can check with him and see if I know he's been having scheduling conflicts, so
you can check with him. So, I appreciate that.
I don't know if this is worth an agenda item, but can I get an estimate of what the procedures are after this committee approves grant funding? Because if that's not a done deal at that point, it goes to the county and it goes to the appropriate cities, correct? Do they have a timeline that they have to or expected to respond to that?
We try to do it as quickly as possible, but sometimes there are scheduling issues getting on agendas. But yes, the county and whichever city is in the geographic area, they don't approve or deny the application, but they need to find that the decision of the committee is consistent with the criteria itself.
So the money really doesn't go out until all the appropriate approvals are given, correct? Is there a 30-day, 60-day, or just we hope they will do it in a reasonable time period?
There's no set deadline to it.
Expected different settlement agreement says 60 days. The cities and the county are supposed to act. I think putting it on a consent calendar would facilitate that.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Go ahead. No, just thinking was.
Yeah, as another council member, I do appreciate the consent calendars. Okay. Any other discussion on it yet? Item number 11, next meeting is scheduled for September 19th, 2025. And the final item on the agenda is committee questions, comments. Questions, comments by anyone on the committee? Seeing none, I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you.